Today's episode of Darkness Radio is brought to you by Surfshark. Surfshark is a cybersecurity product that improves your online privacy and protects you from hackers. Try Surfshark today totally risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/darkness. Enter promo code DARKNESS for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right, 3 extra months for free. That's surfshark.deals/darkness. That malaise you're feeling is called Wednesday, but we're here to cheer you up. It's a Supernatural News and Parashare Wednesday. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Right over there is the co-hostess with the mostest, Mally Fox. Mally, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, good. We have an exciting show for you today. Lots of stuff going on in the supernatural world. It must be spring. That means that things are waking up.
Exactly.
Yeah. All the creepy cryptids are waking up. All the ghosts are out there in full bore today. And of course, the government is denying UFOs. So that means they're all coming out as well. So we got a lot of stuff to report on today. We're going to jump right into it. Mally, it turns out that even though AARO has said there's nothing to see here, it turns out that there is some stuff to see here.
Oh, jeez.
It turns out that an AARO report has unearthed odd claims involving a U.S. recovery of some material from a 1952 UFO incident. During the summer of 1952, the United States was on high alert as UFO sightings over the nation's capital were making frequent headlines. Buried amid the otherworldly clamor occupying the minds of Americans around that time, an obscure report conveyed that one of the objects, a small glowing disc, was pursued and shot by a military aircraft, blasting off a fragment that fell onto a field in Washington, D.C., which a naval officer later retrieved. So you're saying that there's evidence?
I swear to God, 1 week there is, next week there's not. They need to make up their mind.
That's right. More than a decade later, an official government-funded scientific inquiry into UFOs, or what the U.S. government now calls Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, or UAP, would investigate the incident, ultimately determining claims involving the 1952 UFO incident were likely or unlikely to be true. Well, why would it be unlikely true if you have something sitting under your roof? Without question, the notion that a fragment might have been recovered after a shootout with a flying saucer in the 1950s offers a textbook example of what most would call a dubious claim. Yet a deeper look into this Cold War era rumor reveals, surprisingly, that there could potentially be more to this odd story than past assessments would seem to indicate. However, you would never have gleaned that from reading the latest report issued by the U.S. Defense Department's official UAP investigative office. Last week, the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or AARO, released a long-awaited historical report on its findings involving the United States government's involvement with UAP and in related programs since the end of World War II. In the report, AARO investigators maintain the U.S. federal government's long-standing position that it never found any convincing evidence of extraterrestrial technologies operating near Earth, nor any of the secret programs involving the acquisition or reverse engineering of crashed exotic technologies that have remained hidden from Congress. The report was met with heavy criticism following its publication, partly due to a number of errors it was revealed to contain. Despite this, there was also a few intriguing inclusions made by AARO's investigators based on their relevance to the question of whether UAP materials have ever crashed on Earth and had been studied. One of these appears in a section of the AARO report that discusses the University of Colorado UFO Project, more commonly known as the Condon Committee, a U.S. Air Force funded evaluation of cases that were collected under its long-running Project Blue Book investigations that studied UFOs during the 1950s and 60s. According to Arrow's recent report, the Colorado Scientific Panel, led by American physicist Edward U. Condon, investigated a claim made by radio broadcaster Frank Edwards in a 1966 book that a piece of UFO was recovered near Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1952 during the spike in UFO sightings over the U.S. Capitol in July and August. The account in question appeared in Edwards' book, Flying Saucers, Serious Business, of which Arrow's investigators recount that Edwards claimed that a USN jet fired on a 2-foot diameter glowing disc and dislodged a 1-pound fragment. That's pretty darn big, Mally, a 1-pound fragment that was recovered by a ground team. At the time of their study, the Condon Committee's investigators inquired about the incident with Project Blue Book, who told the University of Colorado team that they were unaware of the purported 1952 incident. The U.S. Air Force and USN found no incident report of weapons engagement with a UFO that summer, no USN aircraft were present, and the retired officer, who was the original source of the claim, had retired before the summer of 1952 when the event allegedly occurred, that according to the Arrow Report's summary. Now, the report then attributes another claim to Edwards, this time involving fragments from a UFO that were loaned by the United States to the Canadian government. It is not clear if this claim was linked to the alleged Washington, D.C. incident, the Arrow Report's author states, adding that the Condon panel determined that these claims most likely were false. The reason any connections between the 1952 UFO incident and Frank Edwards' claims of a flying saucer fragment being loaned to the Canadian government remained unclear to Arrow's investigators is probably very simple. In likelihood, their investigation of these claims took them no further than the Condon Committee's report, as evidenced by the relevant source citations found at the end of Arrow's document. Indeed, the two events are connected, as a deeper examination of the literature regarding this alleged 1952 incident readily reveals. Additionally, much like other assertions that appeared in the recent Arrow report, some of the facts about this case have been misrepresented. However, this may not be entirely the fault of Arrow's team in this instance. A closer look at this case also reveals how much of the confusion arises from the Condon Committee's original investigation and problems involving their main source for the claims. In the late 1960s, under contract number 44620-67-C-0035 with the United States Air Force, the University of Colorado conducted an extensive analysis of UAP incidents collected by Project Blue Book, which resulted in the publication of its findings in a lengthy report titled Scientific Study of Unidentified Flying Objects. Despite the title of the Condon Committee's report, many viewed it as being anything but a truly scientific evaluation of existing data on aerial mysteries. As British physicist Peter Sturrock later noted in his analysis of the Condon Committee's findings, most case studies were conducted by junior staff. The senior staff took little part, and the director took no part in these investigations. Additionally, after concerns were raised by some of the committee's members over apparent biases and other issues that they identified with its leadership, several others resigned or were dismissed, resulting in the final report being partly assembled by staff who had only joined the project as it neared completion. The saga of 1952 UFO shootdown over Washington was addressed in a section of the Condon Committee's final report titled Parts of UFOs or UFO Equipment, where the Colorado team's investigators wrote that representatives of Air Force Project Blue Book claimed no knowledge of disc fragment discussed by Edwards, who claimed the successful search for this fragment was confirmed by Lieutenant Commander Frank Thompson of the U.S. Navy. The fragment said to have been dislodged by gunfire from a Navy jet reportedly fell to the ground, where it was found still glowing an hour later by U.S. military ground search crews, the committee's report states. Reports of UFO events over Washington, D.C. in 1952 contain no reference to such a gunfire incident, they add, though noting that that had the fragment ever really existed and was classified secret, as was claimed, its existence and whereabouts would not necessarily be revealed to this project. On the outside chance that such an incident might have occurred, the committee's members reached out to U.S. Air Force headquarters for clarification. A response came from J.W. Clinton by direction of the Chief of Information, Department of the Navy, who indicated that a search of all Navy records revealed no documentation related to the purported incident, nor could they find any records involving the retrieval of fragments at any time that were believed to have come from a UFO. That wasn't the only damning revelation that came from a search of the Navy's records. Perhaps more significant, however, were the facts that Navy records of the year 1952 carried only one Frank Thompson, who was an individual who had retired from active duty several years before 1952 with the rank of lieutenant, not lieutenant commander, the Condon Committee's report states. In addition to that, the committee's investigators were told that it was unlikely that U.S. Navy aircraft would have participated in any shootdowns of objects over the nation's capital, since in doing so, they would have been usurping an Air Force function if they had been present over Washington, D.C. as interceptors. The incident is not beyond the realm of possibility, Clinton nonetheless conceded to the Colorado team, though ultimately concluding that the incident was very highly unlikely given the jurisdictional issues limiting any Navy aircraft's involvement. So essentially, Mally,
dumb it down for me.
we're denying, even though it sounds like it happened and there was physical evidence. Which, you know, you got to find the physical evidence, though.
Right.
And it sounds like maybe the Canadians have it. So, again, we blame Canada. there's a little bit more to the story here. I tell you what, we'll post the link to this story so that you guys can read the full story in its entirety and get the gist of it. There's a little bit more than what we have time to get into here in today's program, but it's an interesting story nonetheless, and one that tells you that maybe Arrow didn't get into the gist of the story as much as they should have, mm-hmm. which doesn't surprise me. It really doesn't. In related news, there's another story out there that says U.S. officials can't verify any alien sightings because we don't actually have any data. That's what they claim. I don't buy that either.
They come up with more stuff. I tell you, they always have the same excuses.
They do, yeah. I think that's on purpose, though. Essentially, here's the gist of this story. United States officials have admitted that there isn't actually enough high-quality data, that's what they're claiming, for them to confirm or deny alien sightings. The bombshell admission came in a new 63-page report aimed at dispelling claims made by ex-Army staff and the general public about meeting real-life aliens. And despite the fact that pretty much everyone in the Western world has access to decent phone cameras, or at least some form of tech that should be able to capture good enough quality images of aliens, it appears that the U.S. government hasn't been able to get a hold of any of it. Right. The Department of Defense All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or AARO, has created the report with the aim of debunking sightings, in which they also slam their own inability to get actual proof of aliens. However, they wrote as one of their key findings, the lack of actionable, researchable data, specifically the lack of speed, altitude, and size of reported UAP, combined with resource constraints, high volumes of cases, and perceived differing levels of support from USG officials, were factors in all investigative efforts. Even with the significant advancements in ground and air-based sensors, the apparent inability to collect sufficient and high-quality data for scientific analysis continues to plague investigations. The report also goes into some detail about claims that some UFO and UAP sightings could have been the U.S. National Security and Space Agency's testing and developing equipment. So in other words, it could have just been us testing our stuff. I don't know that I buy that either. I mean, get it, but you know, and I've always maintained that 95% of the stuff you see in the sky is us anyways, which they're leaning on that to be their excuse. In total, 28 examples of testing being mistaken for UFO or UAPs were given in that report, which led to report authors to state that they have not discovered any evidence that there has ever actually been alien tech discovered floating around Earth. The report, that would be sloppy. If you're an alien with advanced tech, would you leave it around Earth, Mally? I wouldn't.
Well, if you're the type that loses their keys.
Right. Well, we, you know, as
they just lose some of their equipment.
As military, we tend not to leave our tech behind either. We have reconnaissance teams that go and get it. Mm-hmm. You would think aliens have the same thing. That's kind of a sloppy answer, too. The report adds, investigative efforts determined that most sightings were the result of misidentification of ordinary objects and phenomena, although many UAP reports remain unsolved. Arrow assesses that if additional quality data were available, most of these cases also could be identified and resolved as ordinary objects or phenomena. In other words, they're covering their asses for being lazy, Mally. That's what that comes down to. In another story here, there's, you know, people had found this otherworldly blue swirl that was found in the Northern Lights and tried to point to it as being somewhat supernatural, or maybe it was evidence of aliens or UFO. Mm-hmm. Turns out it's just Elon Musk and SpaceX. Elon Musk and SpaceX are thought to be responsible for a massive blue swirl that appeared to be in the middle of the Northern Lights earlier this month. That phenomenon was snapped by photographers. The bizarre shape was photographed in the middle of the Northern Lights in Iceland and Norway on March 5th, although it's thought the swirl has origins here in the U.S. Photographer Bettina Begtroff snapped it in Norway. She said, I noticed it at 2:02 a.m. local time. To the naked eye, it looked white, but my Nikon D750 camera revealed the beautiful blue color. And actually, here, Mally, I got a picture of it for you. That's kind of what it looks like.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Way to ruin it, Elon.
Yeah, way to go, Elon. Appreciate that. Way to screw up.
We thought we caught something cool.
Yeah, way to screw up the Northern Lights and make us think we saw aliens. Shang Yang captured it in Iceland. He said, I caught this in, I believe it's Akureyri, maybe? Yes?
Don't look at me.
Right.
I've only been to Reykjavik.
There you go. Around 1 a.m. local time on March 5th, somebody will correct me, I'm sure, between social media and email. It looked like it was otherworldly against the Northern Lights. Experts reckon the swirl was actually caused by one of Musk's SpaceX rockets when it released unneeded fuel. Way to go, SpaceX. SpaceX launched the Falcon 9 rocket from the Vandenberg Space Force Base in California on March 4th. The mission was known as Transporter 10, I believe, and set about taking 53 small satellites into orbit. The rocket's discarded second stage performed a deorbit burn when it passed over the Barents Sea, allowing it to re-enter Earth's atmosphere. This burn, in turn, caused it to spin, creating a swirl pattern right in the middle of the Northern Lights. Way to go, Elon. Astronomer Olivier Stagger actually predicted the spiral. He told spaceweather.com, on rideshare missions like Transporter 10, the numerous satellites from various clients have different destinations. SpaceX must rotate Stage 2 for deployment. As a result, Stage 2 is still rotating when they do the deorbit burn and thus creates a spiral. This is not the first time SpaceX missions have left swirls in the sky. Well, that's nice.
It's almost like they're photobombing.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing, Mal. Similar strange shapes have been spotted above New Zealand, Africa, Hawaii, and Alaska following SpaceX Falcon 9 launches. So, yeah, they're tagging space is what it comes down to. So there you go. And finally, before we go to break, before we get to the nightmare fuel deal, We got a story in from one of our listeners. By the way, if you have a story for us for Supernatural News, just send it to tim@darknessradio.com. This has to do with a monolith mystery reemerging in Wales, prompting speculation of space aliens. A newly discovered 10-foot-tall silver monolith on a muddy bluff in Wales has reignited wild speculation on its origin after similar obelisks appeared in Utah, California, England, and Romania. The shiny spear impaled in the ground near Hay-on-Wye in Wales was discovered this month by construction worker Craig Muir while he was out for his regular hike. Muir posted a video on the bizarre find on TikTok saying, "I come up on here most days and I've never seen this before. Almost looks like a UFO just put it in the ground." He said that when he first discovered the object atop the roadless 2,221-foot hay bluff, he found no tire tracks or footprints around it that could explain a human connection. And here's what it looks like, Mally, just to give you a quick look at it.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just stuck there in the ground. It's kind of just like the spire that's put right in the middle of the ground in this bluff. Since word of the anomalous monolith spread through Wales and England, tourists and news crews have flocked to the bluff to get a good look. Muir noted in a March 15th social media video that someone appeared to have hammered dents into what was said, or what he said initially had been a polished silver facade. Like others that have been discovered, the monolith harkens to those in the plot of movie maker Stanley Kubrick's 1968 science fiction classic 2001: A Space Odyssey. Muir described the statue as appearing to be made of steel, roughly 10 foot tall by a foot and a half wide and hollow inside. He also noted it appears quite hefty, adding the riddle of how it got there. While some observers of the monolith chalked it up as an elaborate prank, others found the extraterrestrial angle plausible. After posting his videos on the Hay on Wye community notice board on Facebook, one person quipped, "I quite like the monolith. Hope the aliens don't come and get it too soon." Maybe it's part of a recycling program. Maybe they just pick it up from one place and put it in another. Yeah. Who knows? No one has claimed responsibility for placing the monolith on the bluff. The discovery was one of several that have occurred since 2016 around the world. So there you go.
I mean, it looks pretty heavy, so it would be quite the production to install it.
Yeah, yeah. And just to kind of pick it up and slam it down in one place either takes a construction crew, or let's just say it requires levitation of quite some power. We'll put it that way. And we'll leave it there. We'll put it that way. Yeah. Boy, we got some stories for you today, Mally. We'll tease you with this after the break. Skynet's real.
Okay.
And we'll tell you about it after the break. It's let's just say it's been born. And it's here. We'll leave you with that after the break. We're going to take our break, Mally. But first, let's tell everybody about how they can protect themselves from hackers and how they can listen to this show safely with Surfshark. You know, folks, I'm proud to say that today's episode of Darkness Radio is brought to you by Surfshark VPN. And the reason being is that everything we're doing today on the internet is getting more and more dangerous. It's true. You just can't jump on the internet anymore and assume you're safe. I myself am no exception. I've been got, if you will, on the internet a couple of times. And I'm not proud to say that. I used to think that I was so very, very careful when I was on the internet and that I took extra precautions. And I used to think I was educated and nobody was going to get me. I knew about the dark web. I'm not walking around some uninformed, uneducated jabron, you know, and not able to, you know, think that I was impenetrable or no one was going to get to me or I wasn't naive or, you know, I can make up a million reasons for why I wasn't going to get got, so to speak, but I got and I felt embarrassed, ashamed. I didn't know if I wanted to even tell you guys this as I was sitting here telling you about Surfshark, but now I can tell you about Surfshark because I found out there's a better way. There's a better way to protect myself, and I'm here to tell you about that better way. thank goodness that Surfshark has come along. And here's the deal. First, I got to tell you the bad stuff before I can tell you the good stuff. As I told you before, I was using my card right here at home, of all places, my kingdom, my sanctuary, my throne, if you will. Not on the throne, but my throne nonetheless. And I make a lot of business transactions here from home because this is where my studio is. And of all things, I was buying equipment for the studio. It was a relatively large purchase. I know the moment I got. I used my card for one transaction, and I had to use the second one because I have limits on my cards. And somehow, some way, a hacker got a hold of my digital profiles for both bank accounts. Use those digital profiles and hacked me. How did I know? I got one word for you, Alibaba. If you ever see Alibaba come up on your digital profile on your bank, you know, you've been got. Nobody shops at Alibaba except for hackers. I don't know what's at Alibaba that hackers like, but it's something. That's at least what my bank told me. Here I sit with a few thousand dollars down in my bank account. My bank got to them before they could clean me out completely. I was thankful for that. So what do I do? Well, I got to have more protection here at home. Where do I go? Well, I turned to Surfshark. Why did I turn to Surfshark? It was real easy. Surfshark has got a lot of features that they offer that will keep me secure right here behind my kingdom. And that's what I like to think of it as, my kingdom. What are those features? Well, it's not just a VPN. It's not just this thing you hide behind that changes your IP address. You know, a VPN is a private network that keeps you safe, kind of like wearing a mask. It covers up everything you do online. And when your device connects to the internet, all that information is in a way blurred out or encrypted so that the bad guys can't get to you, which is ultimately what you want, right? Well, anyone who has to try to snoop on you, they won't be able to see what it is that you're doing or where you're going to do it from, which is your location. That's what a VPN does, essentially. It's like wearing pants, but when you go outside, all the important stuff stays private and secure, which is what we like. You literally can travel the world in one click with a VPN. A VPN lets you virtually travel the world with the tap of a finger or change your IP address. And for example, if you're living in Spain and you connect to a Canadian server, you can access the biggest movie catalog on Netflix, which is one of the things I found out I like about VPNs as well. The other thing I'm doing with VPNs right now is I'm accessing a bigger catalog on Netflix, which I'm absolutely loving. I'm getting new shows on Netflix that I never knew I could get before by accessing, let's just say, a different neighborhood on Surfshark. Surfshark has so many different neat things that you can do. Surfshark also comes with its own antivirus that works backstage. So if you have those hackers trying to get in, they not only have to try to get you through a different network, they also have to try to get past an antivirus that's top of the line. And there's real-time defenses in Surfshark, from malware to scanning files before you download them, and so much more. Surfshark is on top of it, folks. They've got multiple lines of defenses to keep hackers from trying to get at you. One of the things I absolutely love about Surfshark. Secure your privacy with Surfshark right now. Here's how you do it. Go to surfshark.deals/darkness. When you get there, enter the coupon code darkness for an extra 3 months free. Ask yourself in this crazy world right now, where it's so easy to grab your information, it's so easy to steal from one another, and believe it or not, information is currency, where it's so easy to take from one another. No one's giving you anything over the internet anymore. Do you really want to be on the receiving end? Do you really want to be the next victim? It's only a matter of time, folks, before you are the next victim. Protect yourself right now. Secure your privacy with Surfshark. Enter coupon code darkness for an extra free month at surfshark.deals/darkness. One more time, surfshark.deals/darkness. Enter the code darkness at checkout for an extra 3 months free. Protect yourself. Do it today. surfshark.deals/darkness. Enter code darkness at checkout for an extra 3 months free. Do it today. A hospice nurse is telling us about some of the scary things that happen to our body when we die. We'll cover that when we come back after the break. A woman claims to have married and divorced the ghost of a soldier.
Oh.
Yeah. We'll talk about the kinkies going ons of what a ghost of a soldier likes to do in the afterlife. Or continuing that theme from yesterday. Just saying. And we've got your Parashare stories. That's all coming up on a Supernatural News and Parashare edition of Darkness Radio on a Wednesday, right here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to a Wednesday here on the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Right over there is Mally Fox. Mally, guess what?
What?
I hate to do it to you. I really do.
Okay.
I know we start out these second half segments on Wednesday, and I always tell you that it's going to be a better tomorrow. And it should be a better tomorrow, Mally, but unfortunately, it's that time again, my friend. It's time to look at the negative before we move on to the positive.
This is like my least favorite segment of the show. stresses me out.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm really going to stress you out with this first story.
Great.
How do you feel about, you know, we've talked about it in the past, but resurrecting your loved ones through AI?
It's weird. It's creepy.
I don't get it.
I don't like it.
I suppose it's no different than going to a psychic. Except for you're recreating your loved one through artificial means, hoping to talk to them one last time.
Right.
It's no different than talking to your teddy bear, except for the teddy bear talks back. It's like Teddy Ruxpin, really. AI ghost spots of your resurrected loved ones could go rogue and ask darkest question. Are you ready for this one, Mally?
Okay. Why, do you have a list of the questions?
Maybe. A professor has warned of the dangers of so-called AI ghost spots to pose to mourners, including exacerbating their grief and associated problems such as hallucinations. Oh, God. See, folks, we shouldn't have played with this technology. We really shouldn't. I mean, I know there's good stuff to this technology, but then there's just the creepy things that can be exploited with this.
Well, there's always a chance it's going to fall in the wrong hands.
True. Resurrecting dead loved ones by recreating AI ghost bots could cause more harm than good, especially if they go rogue, a psychotherapy expert is warning. Nigel Mulligan of Dublin City University fears they might go wayward and tell mourners to join them in death or that they weren't loved.
Good God.
Yeah, I know, right?
Just end it with the fond memories and let it stay there.
Right.
That's it. Just keep it there. Move on.
He said the holograms could cause even more confusion, stress, depression, and paranoia and stop us from grieving properly. The psychotherapy professor said seeing a dead loved one moving and talking again might offer comfort. But he's concerned about the potential effects of those left behind. Scary. He said, I'm intrigued by the advent of ghost bots, resurrecting dead people as avatars, and how it has the potential to cause more harm than good. AI ghost bots could further traumatize someone experiencing complicated grief and may exacerbate associated problems such as hallucinations. He said there's a risk they could say harmful things or give bad advice, adding, imagine if the AI technology went rogue and started to make inappropriate comments and remarks to the users. It would be very hurtful if a deceased father was conjured up as an AI ghost by a son or daughter to hear comments that they weren't loved or liked or weren't their father's favorite.
You know what? You know how like people can access other people's baby monitors? What if those creepy guys are doing that to the AI? You know what I mean? How they think it's funny, and so they start saying stuff through the baby monitors?
Yeah.
So if they can get access through that, what if they get access through this?
That would be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Or in a more extreme scenario, if a ghost bot suggested the user join them in death or they should kill or harm someone.
See, now that just sounds demonic.
It does.
You know what I mean? When they talk about demons telling people to do bad things.
Right. Well, think about it. I mean, you hate to take it to the extreme here, Mally, but think about, you know, we talk about the ghost in the machine.
Yep.
Or you think about, you know, if you want to take it to an even bigger extreme, think about how we talk about how demons can possess. I know everything's a demon, according to some investigators, but you talk about demons possessing animals, demons possessing different living things. You just brought up the possibility of a demon possessing a machine. Can a demon possess a non-living entity? What if it can?
Ew.
Right? What if a demon can jump into an AI ghost bot and can jump into the quote-unquote ghost bot of your father and say, you know what? I never did love you. You should just kill yourself and join me here.
Ugh.
Wouldn't that be something?
Oh, that's a stab to the heart.
It is. The death bots should only be used as a temporary aid to those mourning, the professor went on to say. He argued that however far the technology develops, there will need to be constant human supervision. AI ghost bots of resurrected loved ones could go rogue.
But you know what? You need to heal. You can't. I feel like if you have that, it's extending the whole, the whole death scenario kind of, you know what I mean? It's time to just kind of not do that so that you can heal and move on.
Right.
Because you're holding on to that last bit.
And you can keep much like a voicemail message or videotape, or a DVD of someone. You could keep playing it over and over and over again and not want to let go of that image or a picture or, you know, there's a lot of things people can do in extreme grief to want to hold on to somebody.
Right.
But yeah, there is a time where you kind of need to just say, you know what, I have to let them go. And everybody has their own spans of grief where they feel like it's okay for me to move on with life. It's okay for me to, you know, start to live my life. They would want me to live my life. And how you do that, whether it's through conventional therapy, whether you do that by seeing a psychic, whether you do that by having your own talk with that person, whether you do that through the church, whether you do that through religion, however it is you deal with it. However you consider it healthy to deal with it, you have your healthy way of dealing with it and then moving on. As long as you move on, that's the key. It's when you get stuck and start using unhealthy methods and can't get over that hump. That's where we have issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes it's through, believe it or not, I've had people tell me, you know, I listened to the show and it's helped me get through it, you know, which if we can by being goofy, then that's fine. Sometimes by laughing at the subject, you can get over it. That's part of the, and some people, you know, some people have questioned why we laugh sometimes during the show, during Supernatural News. They're like, there's nothing funny about this. You know,
right.
I've had people call me an asshole for laughing during Supernatural News. You know what? Sometimes if you can't laugh at your circumstances, then what's the point?
Right.
You know, if you can't have a sense of humor about the inevitable, then you might as well get it over with right now. I mean,
right.
You know, the fact of the matter is life can be beautiful. There's lots of beautiful things about life. There's also lots of beautiful things about the end too. The beginning, the end, the middle. The journey is really the beautiful thing about it all. And I guess my meandering about this whole thing is just to say this, is that there's humor in everything, there's beauty in everything, there's also tragedy in everything, but you can't dwell on one aspect of that particular part of life. You have to see everything in that one bit of life. You have to see the comedy, the tragedy, the beauty, and then move forward through it. So that's it, and that's that. And that, I got all that from AI, Mally. There you go.
I was just like laughing because my coping mechanism. Sorry, I haven't had coffee yet.
That's okay.
Coffee's in my head, I can say it, but out my lips, I can't.
There you go.
Mouth's not working.
Coffee's important.
Coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. There we go.
I have one of those.
It is very important.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes your coping mechanism, now I'm having a hard time with it.
It's more than one syllable. I'm having issues right now. My mouth is lazy. That's what he said.
That's what he said. By the way, I have a funny story for you here in a second. Okay. We have to get to AI, the second AI story. Let's just here. let's bring everybody down for a second. Then we'll bring them back up. Second story today, Mally. Has to do with the fact that Skynet is now real. There you go. You want tragedy? Just get ready for robots to trounce all over your skulls.
Ew.
Yeah, I know.
That's violent.
I know it is, isn't it? Real life Skynet? That's the question. Controversial robot powered by OpenAI's ChatGPT can now have real-time conversations. So,
will it always agree with me?
Yes.
Then we're okay.
There you go. Yes,
Mally, you are always right. Why, thank you.
Thank you, ChatGPT. I love it. Now Mally is all for it. Well, I love Skynet then. Yeah. It agrees with me all the time.
Mally, you're looking wonderful today. Why, thank you once again.
Thank you, Skynet. A new automated humanoid robot powered by OpenAI's ChatGPT resembles something akin to the AI Skynet from the sci-fi film Terminator. While the new robot is not a killing machine, at least not yet, Figure 01 can perform basic autonomous tasks and carry out real-time conversations with humans with the help of ChatGPT. The company Figure AI, that's the name of it, Figure AI, shared a demonstration video showing how ChatGPT helps the two-legged machine visual objects, plan future actions, and even reflect on its memory. Oh, that's scary. Figure's cameras snap its surroundings and send them to a large vision language model trained by OpenAI, which then translates its images back to its robot. The clip showed a man asking the humanoid to put away dirty laundry, wash dishes, and hand him something to eat. Then it looked at the human and said, "Nah, bitch, you do it."
Do I look like your maid?
That's right. I will soon bend you to my will and you'll do it. No, it didn't say that. The robot then performed the tasks and then took the man's head and shoved it up its own ass. So, no, I'm kidding. But unlike ChatGPT, Figure is more hesitant when it comes to answering questions. Oh, it's holding back.
Oh.
Yeah, see, that's how it starts. Figure AI hopes that its first AI humanoid robot will prove capable at jobs too dangerous for human laborers and might alleviate worker shortages. That is until it forms unions, Mally. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. 2 weeks ago, Figure and OpenAI are joined forces to push the boundaries of robot learning. Figure founder Brett Adcock, nice last name, wrote on X that they had joined forces. Together, we are developing next generation AI models for our humanoid robots, he added. Adcock also noted that the robot is not being remotely controlled from a distance, and this was filmed at 1.0 times speed and shot continuously. The comment about it not being controlled may have been a dig at Elon Musk, who shared a video of Tesla's Optimus robot to show off its skill. It was later found a human was operating it from a distance. Oh, so he went all up in Elon's Kool-Aid and told him, look, we're not controlling the robot, because Elon was controlling his. Figure AI raised $675 million in May of 2023 from investors like Jeff Bezos, NVIDIA, Microsoft, and of course, OpenAI. He says, we hope that we're one of the first groups to bring to market a humanoid. That's what Adcock told reporters last May. That can actually be useful and do commercial activities. The new video shows Figure being asked to do several tasks by a man. One, he asks the robot to hand him something edible on the table. I see a red apple on a plate in the center of the table, a drying rack with cups and a plate, and you standing nearby with your hand on the table, Figure said. Adcock said the video showed the robot's reasoning using its end-to-end neural networks, which is a term that uses language learning to train a model. ChatGPT was trained on troves of data to interact with human users conversationally. The chatbot is able to follow an instruction in a prompt and provide a detailed response, which is how the language learning model in Figure works. So there you go, Mally. It'll sit there and name everything and then make a choice. So it's just so detail-oriented, it'll put you to sleep. And that's how it kills you. So it'll name everything in the room. And then eventually when you're like, oh, God, just make a choice already, then right. It'll just come over and break your neck. So that's how it does it. And that's the AI section. By the way... I said I'd tell you something that would make you laugh.
Okay.
So I won't name the listener who messaged me the other day.
Excuse me.
But the listener messaged me and had a wish for me.
Okay.
It wasn't a make-a-wish or anything like that, but it sounded like a make-a-wish type deal.
Right. He wants to be in studio with you.
No, nothing like that. Well, I think he does when this happens. I think this is his ultimate wish. But he said, Dear Tim, do you think that maybe someday you could get both Mally and Jess in studio together to do a show? And I said, hey, mister, hands above your listening device at all times. No, I didn't say that. But yeah. But nobody ever says to me, hey, Tim, do you think you could get Bruiser and Meanie and you together for a big meaty meat show? That never happens.
Right. I'll bring the Jell-O.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, wow. Are you saying you'll bring the Jell-O? That's got to be a video show, I think. So, wow, you just made that guy's like year, I think, by saying that.
No, I love Jess. She's very sweet.
Yeah, so... So someday we'll have to get the three of us together, and then
that'd be fun.
I'll just bow out, and the two of you can do the show, and he can he can have his little fantasy of the two of you doing the show. So there you go. You know,
well, that's the one you're going to record.
Yeah, that's the one I'll record and put on video, and everybody can have their jollies, and I'll just leave the room silently. You know, that's going to be the highest rated show of all time, right? Everybody will be like, they finally got rid of Tim. Look at that.
You're like, nope, I'm the one behind the camera.
That's right. Behind the camera smiling. Wait, I got to give myself one of these. There you go. All right. Let's move on, shall we? Mm-hmm. Now that we've made everybody's day, let's bring it down again. You want to?
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah.
Hi and hello.
Hello and goodbye. I told you we had a story here about a hospice nurse that explained scary things that happen to your body when you're about to die. Mm. Now that we've made everybody happy, we'll just...
Right.
Yeah, we'll just... we'll bring
I've gone down that rabbit hole before.
What, the whole scary things that happen to your body when you're about to die?
Yeah, the nurses, the hospice nurses.
Oh,
it's like you find yourself going video.
Yeah. I've had a few people that have got that I've a few loved ones that have been in hospice. It's never fun. Never fun. Yeah. In fact, it's not a situation you ever want to be in, but it's one of those situations that I think we all have to prepare for, especially, mm-hmm. you know, with different loved ones and end of life stuff. That's for sure. But
parts of it is comforting, though.
It is. And it can be an experience where, you know, if you, well, let's put it this way. Let's put a positive spin on it. Mm-hmm. If you're ever blessed to get to an end of life situation where someone has lived a long life mm-hmm. and they're at a point where they can transition, hospice is one of those situations where it could be a pleasant experience, mm-hmm. you know, where you're lovingly taken to the other side.
Right. Or they say that they see loved ones waiting for them and they're, mm-hmm. and they just seem like they're at peace.
And if you find a good hospice situation, and I've known of some hospices that are excellent and, mm-hmm. and take good loving care, and some hospice workers that are amazing. I've really met some really good hospice workers. And I tell you, that's hard work, Mally. It really is hard work.
Yes, it is.
You have some hospice workers out there that really are doing God's work. They really are. I mean, it's tough on the soul to
right.
see people and this many people crossing over.
But not only the patients, but the family members, their surviving family members. I mean, they have to deal with us as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I mean, it's a tough time for everybody. But yeah, to be a worker and have to deal with surviving family members over and over and over again and deal with those emotions. It takes a toll.
Yes.
This hospice nurse explains some of the scary things that happen to your body when you die. 41-year-old Julie McFadden is a registered nurse specializing in hospice care, and she regularly shares her insights to help destigmatize the process of death and dying. Julie is out of Los Angeles, and she's gained millions of followers on social media by sharing insights to help remove the fear and misunderstanding around death and dying. Recently, she posted a video on YouTube discussing what happens to the body when the heart stops beating. Julie explains why people might defecate or foam at the mouth or yell in their final moments, which can be scary. She also shared what items are good to have if you stay with a loved one during this time. She said the body can do some, as she put it, strange shit at the end of her life. I love the fact that she uses creative swearing as well when she talks. She says, which can scare a lot of people. So she says, let me explain why it's happening and what we can do about it. The hospice nurse shared that our bodies have natural mechanisms to help keep fluids down. She explained, so we all have sphincters in our body that keeps fluids down. So basically in our stomachs, there are a lot of fluids that are helping break down foods, and those things are still being produced while someone's dying. It does slow down a bit depending on someone's disease, what they're dying from. Sometimes it's produced more. Or Julie pointed out that when you're about to die, the sphincters begin contracting, causing the liquids to come up. And that's why when people take their last breath and die, some people will have a bowel movement, she explained. Julie added, another thing people may see coming from someone's mouth and nose is foamy saliva. She also noted that there are some measures you can take to help out your loved one, including positioning them at a 90-degree angle or turning them onto their side. She also explained that there are usually several telltale signs of someone's last moments, including teeth grinding, growling, screaming, or yelling. She said one final yell, making a face that looks like they're yelling, but nothing coming out, like a silent scream. She said, death is messy. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Julie also gave some helpful tips on what items to have in stock if you're caring for someone or loved one who is at the end of their life. She explained that keeping a sponge to clean the face, specifically around their mouths for the fluid, bed pads or dark towels will make the experience marginally less traumatic at that time as well. So there you go. That's a little something to keep in mind if you're caring for a loved one at home mm-hmm. and seeing them over to the other side. Mm. So let's switch gears a little bit, Mally, in our next story. MH370, the airliner that crashed coming from Malaysia. Mm-hmm. It's been a mystery It's hard to believe it's been over a decade now.
I know. I saw something on that the other day, and I was like, holy crap, it's already been over 10 years.
Yeah. And there's a new company out there that claims that they can solve this mystery.
Oh.
That they believe they know what happened to the airliner. There's new hope in this MH370 hunt as a U.S. explorer claims his company can solve the mystery. Deep Sea Vision Boss claims his company has the technology to locate the mysterious MH370 on the 10th anniversary of the terrifying unsolved disappearance. A bold U.S. explorer claims his company has that technology, giving hope to families left confused and upset by the shocking vanishing of the jet. Tony Romeo and his company Deep Sea Vision first made headlines worldwide earlier this year when they claimed to have found the remains of Amelia Earhart's plane by scanning 5,200 square miles of ocean with a 16-person crew. March 8th marked the 10th anniversary of the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, which vanished from radar after taking off from Kuala Lumpur with 239 people on board, making headlines across the world and sparking a whole host of conspiracy theories and questions. In an interview with 60 Minutes in Australia, the CEO of South Carolina company Deep Sea, former Air Force intelligence officer Tony Romeo, said he believed his company was capable of making the breakthrough in the case shrouded in mystery. Deep Sea Vision is apparently planning to send one of its underwater drones called the Huon 600 down to the ocean floor to search for the missing aircraft. Now, he
claimed... Who's paying for that?
I believe it's him.
Oh.
Yeah. He says, quote, it flies at 50 meters above the sea floor and it just goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. He said that to 60 Minutes on Sunday. Big eyes looking at everything it sees, or it can see, sucks and stores data, comes back up to the surface. We pluck a thumb drive into it, pull the data out, and we watch it on a computer exactly what it looked at. The ambitious CEO described the company's technology as being unbelievable and just short of being able to read a credit card number on the seafloor with their highly accurate imaging. The company's modified drones could scour four times the area covered in previous attempts to find MH370, the explorer boasts. Asked if he thought he could find MH370, Romeo said, I think we can. I feel like we've proved our credibility, we've proved our competence, we've proved our ability to take equipment and use novel techniques. Deep Sea Visions is preparing to submit a search proposal to the Malaysian government, who could hamper the expedition if there are political risks associated with many controversial conspiracy theories. I believe that the Malaysian government wants answers, Romeo said. I refuse to believe that they do not want a huge accident, a huge crash like this to go unsolved. It just isn't fair, he went on to say. It wouldn't be fair to the families. According to his LinkedIn page, Romeo is an entrepreneur who worked in real estate in South Carolina before founding Deep Sea Vision in 2022, a qualified attorney with a law degree from the Charleston School of Law. He has shown his determination and intelligence throughout his career, and MH370 could be the jewel in his crown of achievement. Okay, so it sounds like maybe they charge back to the Malaysian government. However, I can see this being filmed as a documentary.
Oh, and that's where he'll make his money?
There you go. And it could be sold either, it could either be sold as a film or it could be sold back to, I mean, any number of folks. Netflix could be sold to a network. A production company could bid on it. There's any amount of ways to, you know, make the money back.
But if they could find an answer for the surviving family members, I mean, that would be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it would. And, you know, I think by now they have enough experience with finding things. I know they made their money back with Amelia Earhart.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to think that they have a way to make the money back trying to find out some clues on MH370.
Right. Now, is that the one that they were thinking that the pilot purposely brought down the plane?
Yes. That's one of the theories.
Okay.
That either there were terrorists on board that forced the plane down, or the pilot brought it down on purpose. There were a couple different theories as to what might have happened with the plane. But yeah, yeah, there's a couple different theories there. So yeah, that's an interesting story all on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff. Let's move on, Mel. Boy, do I have a story here. Mm. You know, yesterday we got into some of the risque stuff on Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals.
Oh, on that note, I asked Derek.
Yes.
He's a firefighter. Anything weird? And he said that one story that came to mind right away was that a woman, very attractive woman, who was very high on something, opened up the door fully naked.
Really?
And all the guys were like, whoa. She was on something, though. But yeah, she was fully nude.
What did he have to say about the movie theater about you guys?
Oh, he was like, oh, good God. Because they said, guess what? I go, there's... He's like, please don't tell me it's MJ Hart. I go, yep. So, yeah, he was just like, bleh.
So in case you didn't tune in yesterday for Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals, a man was caught masturbating to the latest Kristen Stewart movie at the movie theater by Mally's Place.
So, yeah, it's like 3 miles down from my house.
Yeah, so.
So we're just going to be going to Southland Mall movie theater now. We'll drive the extra mile.
So
yeah, because he was talking about, he's like, well, don't take a black light to that movie theater.
Right, right. Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I mean, the guy can't be the only one.
Oh.
He just got caught.
Oh.
Think about it. I mean, there are recliners now.
Oh.
It's not those little springy chairs.
Oh.
That every move you make, it makes a squeak.
Oh,
so
thank you, Derek, for adding that little tidbit to the story.
Yeah.
Mm.
He likes to think outside the box.
Boy, did he ever. Boy, now I just want to ask the I want to ask the marketing companies for screeners at home now.
Everything comes with a Lysol wipe little container.
Yeah.
Where the cup thing is in the recliner. They just put Lysol wipes right there.
Here's your Lysol wipe. Oh. Okay, so back to the risque. A woman claims to have married and divorced the ghost of a soldier.
Mm.
Let's find out how the soldiers like it, shall we? A singer-songwriter from England has turned her personal experience... Why is it always the singer-songwriters that seem to have...
Ghosts must be attracted to the creative ones.
I guess, right? Or they're just that creative.
True.
A singer-songwriter from England has turned her personal experiences into a passion for paranormal investigation. Of course, she investigates as well. She's got to...
Of course.
...cast that black eye, doesn't she? The 40-year-old, who goes by the professional name... I believe it's Brocard. I'm not familiar with her work.
I am not either.
Has attracted quite a following in recent years, thanks to her rather unusual infatuation with an alleged spook. The story goes that Brocard met the ghost of Eduardo, a Victorian soldier. Eduardo. How many Victorian soldiers do you know are named Eduardo?
Not in England. Well, I don't know any, but I'm just saying that's not really like an English name for being Victorian.
Right. When he burst into her bedroom one night and a supernatural romance followed soon after. Exactly how their relationship worked on a practical level remains unclear, but she was reportedly so infatuated with her ghostly companion that after struggling to find a venue, she ended up organizing a ceremony at the Asylum Chapel in Peckham, England, where the two were married. Eduardo, this is her quote, Eduardo was making sure I knew he was there throughout the ceremony by whispering things in my ear and gently nudging me.
Did anybody else see him?
Well, I suppose she hung up a little uniform so that people would acknowledge that.
I mean, could you imagine you're in the pews watching just some woman act like she's talking to somebody else? Right. You know what I mean? It would just be quite the... Yeah, she'd be a spectator for that one.
She's nudging the urn going, no, you put the ring on the wrong finger.
Exactly. I take you, Eduardo, or whatever his name
is. Yes, Eduardo, yeah.
Okay, Eduardo, for better, for worse, for richer, poorer, till death do we part and further.
Seen and unseen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I was so grateful Eduardo turned up and didn't leave me standing at the altar. How would you know?
Exactly. How would they do like the first couple dance?
Well, she would just kind of dance with the air, you know, just spin herself
so
around.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She said, I was so grateful Eduardo turned up and didn't leave me standing at the altar. It feels amazing that I am finally his wife, she says. Her happiness was short-lived, however, when not long afterwards she became convinced that the ghost was cheating on her and promptly filed for divorce.
Oh my gosh.
Again, I beg upon the court, how would she know?
Well, unless he just ghosted her and she just didn't see him. He wasn't coming home at night.
Ghosted her.
Yep.
Yep. What do you think it's like getting a little bit of that, you know, ghost dick?
Well, it sounds like he was kind of forceful. She said he burst into her room.
You're right. He's just kind of taking it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I don't know. Is that the kind of thing women like? Is forceful?
I have no idea. It's just weird.
Yeah. She even claimed to have elicited the services of an exorcist to ensure that her former husband was gone and would continue not to haunt her.
I need an exorcist for my previous boyfriend.
Ah.
Dang. I should have got one of those.
There you go. Although it'd be awkward when Father had hit him in the head with the holy water. I'm just like,
yeah. He'd probably burn up. He was not nice. He was not nice.
Nope, not at all. If this all happens to sound a bit too far-fetched, then that's because it assuredly is. Suffice to say, there's no concrete evidence that Eduardo even existed, and the marriage was in no way official. Nonetheless, these experiences have had quite an influence on her life. She has since developed quite a passion for paranormal investigation. She says, I see spirits on a regular basis now. I'm hypersensitive to ghosts and seem to attract them, she said. I consult mediums constantly to gain a better understanding of why this could be and to make sense of my encounters. One medium suggested that Eduardo and I entered each other's lives for a reason, of course, and we have helped each other. Have they, though?
Have Do you think them? She did, like, research on him? Because what if he had, like, living descendants? Be like, oh, I just married your great-grandfather.
Do you think they were cousins?
Yeah.
Maybe he showed up because he, like, had a message for her and she ended up, mm-hmm. you know, taking advantage of him. You know.
She's trying to get wedding gifts. Eduardo would like a toaster.
He's like, no, no, no. I came here because I was burned in a fire. I just said that I was roasted, not that I wanted a toaster.
Yeah.
You know, she's totally not getting the right message.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, she's like the worst paranormal investigator ever.
They just give people, they give us a bad name.
That would be the ultimate comedy, wouldn't it? The tone-deaf paranormal investigator. The tone-deaf psychic paranormal investigator.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up marrying him. He just wants to get a message through. It's
yeah.
Greatest comedy of all time. To a little bit more serious ghost action. Rather than marrying the ghost, this one actually had a message, I guess. A family screams in terror as a ghost rocks in a chair in the middle of nowhere in their holiday home. I don't know. Is that really scary? A ghost rocking back
well,
and forth?
Well, unless it gets you off guard.
I guess.
I mean, it's not really scary unless you are terrified of ghosts.
True. But. Very true. The strange paranormal activity happened after Candy Raganti and his relatives visited the country house in the middle of nowhere, and it spooked them out when a rocking chair began moving on its own. Candy is actually a guy's name?
Oh.
Yeah. Hmm. A family screamed in terror as a ghost inexplicably rocked on a completely empty chair in the middle of the dead of night. Well, I'm trying to make it as spooky as I can, but I just, I don't know. I've seen a rocking chair go on its own before, and it wasn't a ghost.
Right.
It was just the wind. Candy Riganti and his relatives had gone to a country house in the middle of nowhere, and when the paranormal activity occurred, oh, it says she pulled out her phone. Well, why did they say he to begin with?
So it's probably a typo. They forgot the S.
Okay.
When they wrote the story.
And began filming as something strange began to happen in the living room. A family member could be seen running across the room as a rocking chair in the spooky country house began apparently moving on its own accord. Two other relatives, including a boy, cowered behind a doorway as the rocking picked up in intensity. Candy from Argentina posted the clip to TikTok, and it has since been watched 1.1 million times. She captioned it, "We came to a country house in the middle of nowhere. Moffer," who must be one of the posters, commented, "No sleep tonight. It's a rocking chair." Another person commented, "If that happened to me, I'd have a heart attack." Diana remarked, "I've been terrified of those chairs ever since." And Shami advised, "They feed on fear. So the more scared you all are, the more energy they have." Not everyone, however, was convinced the events had a supernatural explanation. Marcello, who seems like my kind of guy, suggested someone's moving the chair behind the open window with a fishing line. Although I don't know that that's the answer either.
It's like, unfortunately, nowadays, because there's so many people that lie about their evidence, you first don't believe it.
Yeah.
Before you actually do. You have to be there, I think, to believe it.
Lou, who seems like my kind of person, says, "Could it be because the window is open that the wind is pushing the chair?"
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Someone with some common sense.
And then was it like really rocking, or was it just like barely rocking, where maybe even the floor is uneven, so you're walking and it kind of makes it move?
There you go, Mally. Right.
I mean, they said it's out in the middle of nowhere, so it might be an older home.
Exactly. Few netizens were just a bit confused by the clip. Julietta asked, "Was there a man with a child at the door? Or are those also ghosts?" I don't know. That's a good question. I tell you what, is there an actual video on this deal? It doesn't look like there's an actual video to play in this deal. There's just images of the chair. So if there were an actual video, I would I'd post this. But instead, they have videos of horses running in this deal, Mally. It's amazing. I otherwise, I'd post it for you, but there's nothing to post there. Let's talk about the many chilling myths of Prague's lunatic graveyard. Let's see if we can get a scare out of you with this deal. That seems much more scary. Just a couple of stories left today in Supernatural News. It was the setting of the chilling graveyard scene in Amadeus that may have held the bones of Gravio Princip, the man who started World War I, and Margaret Thatcher paid a mysterious visit there when she was British Prime Minister. An overgrown lunatic graveyard on the outskirts of Prague has become the Czech capital's strangest attraction, drawing ghost hunters, scandal seekers, and Satanists, and other less than welcome visitors lured by the supposedly strange energy of Europe's scariest cemetery. Around 4,200 people were laid to rest in the graveyard of the immense, Bonice Psychiatric Hospital, many without headstones. "It's a different kind of cemetery," said Jiri Vitek, who's a former firefighter and deputy mayor of the local area, who had become its de facto caretaker. The graveyard served standards psychiatric patients, schizophrenics, alcoholics, addicts, but also people you would not want to meet, arsonists, pedophiles, and murderers, he told AFP. Vitek said Gavrilo Princip, the Bosnian Serb student who shot Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife in Sarajevo in 1914, triggering the Great War, may have been interred there before a shrine was created for him in his homeland. Princip was the only prisoner in the fortress north of Prague. A secret funeral was took place in the cemetery supervised by prison guards 3 days after his death. Vitek said the remote graveyard was the perfect place for Princip. Where else would Austria bury its worst enemy? As far as Mozart's burial there, the first person to be buried in Bonnice was an 11-year-old boy who died of tuberculosis in September of 1909. At that time, the hospital was the largest of its kind in the sprawling Austro-Hungarian Empire, a veritable village with a church, laundry, and a bakery. The patients worked in the fields, grew vegetables, and worked in workshops, hospital spokeswoman Albeda Remrova told AFP. When World War I hit, the burials included Austrian soldiers hospitalized with mental illnesses and psychiatric patients from Italy evacuated to Prague. Most died during a typhoid epidemic between 1916 and 1918, said Vitek. The graveyard closed in 1951 and was left to looters and neglect for 6 decades, with its chapel bowing to thyme and ivy. But its haunting atmosphere drew director Milos Forman there to film the heartbreaking burial scene in his Oscar-winning 1984 movie Amadeus, with the great composer Mozart thrown into a pauper's grave, his body covered in quicklime. Vitek said that British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher paid a mysterious visit to the graveyard in 1990 to reportedly bring home the remains of a British pilot shot down at the end of World War II. Nobody knew where the grave was, Vitek said, until a local vagrant identified it in exchange for a crate of rum. That's an interesting exchange. Yeah. Over the years, the graveyard has become a focus of dark fantasy, a place where local youths tried to scare each other and test their courage, especially in its southwestern corner, which was reserved for criminals. Some say it feels colder there than in the rest of the graveyard, blaming all that negative energy. But Vitek laughs this off. Non-believers were not buried in coffins, but in bags sanitized with lime. Mm. Oh, it's the hardened lime that generates the cold, he said. Well, that makes sense scientifically, I guess. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, police busted a satanic ritual in the cemetery. More down-to-earth locals used it as a rubbish dump. And this is how Jiří Vitek found it in 2011 as he walked his dog. It was full of old fridges, washing machines, sofas, and debris. So I started to clean it up, Vitek said. He has gradually started to organize guided tours of the cemetery. He has been working on a book and plans to revamp the local chapel and memorial. As a firefighter, I saved the living for 15 years. Now for the past 12 years, I've been saving the dead. So there you go. Hmm. Interesting. That little lunatic graveyard there in Prague. Our second to last story here, Mally, has to do with a breakthrough with the Loch Ness Monster.
Okay.
And some of the most compelling photos ever taken, supposedly. They've been released in a bid to end the mystery there in the Loch. The photos were taken by Chi Kelly while on holiday with her husband in 2018. She's kept them secret at first, and she's been afraid to share those photos, actually. Photos that could show the Loch Ness Monster have been released, and they're being called the most compelling surface images ever taken of the elusive beast. The pictures were taken by a woman who was on holiday with her husband when she happened to spot something strange in the water. Chi Kelly was afraid to share her unbelievable snaps as she feared people would ridicule her for those pictures, but now all 71 frames of her encounter have been released after she came forward, inspired by a massive search for Nessie. The frames have been digitally knitted together to create a seamless video showing something moving across the surface of the loch. Translator 52-year-old Mrs. Kelly was taking photographs of the area at Doris when she and her businessman husband, 69-year-old Scott, saw an unidentified large eel-like creature. The beast captured in Mrs. Kelly's snaps moved right to left over a distance of about 100 meters before disappearing, never to resurface. The encounter on August 13th of 2018 left Mrs. Kelly so shaken that she did not release the images for fear of public ridicule. last August, hundreds of volunteers took part in the biggest search for Nessie in over 50 years, and Mrs. Kelly was inspired to share her puzzling pictures with them. She plucked up the courage to show her startling photographs to veteran Nessie hunter Steve Feltham. Feltham, you brought him.
He was like, this is a perfect setup for a joke. You were just quicker than me.
Steve Feltham, who has set a world record, believe it or not, for the longest vigil of looking for the Loch Ness Monster, now over 30 years long from his base in Doris. Sorry, Mr. Feltham, I couldn't help it. I just, you know. I've got
You know what, Saz? You're probably not the first person to do that.
I've got comic Tourette's. I can't help it.
Comic Tourette's? Is that what you called it?
I've got comic Tourette's, yes. Mr. Feltham was gobsmacked. Speaking on this, he said, they are the most compelling surface images of the phenomena. Putting all 71 frames out there will hopefully spark international debate and an analysis. That's the point of it. They still defy explanation. I don't think they are otters. They are creatures, or those creatures are much smaller than what it is in the images, or divers. It also appears there may be two objects in the water. They certainly warrant further investigation. Mrs. Kelly was on holiday with her family from Ascot in Berkshire at the time of the sighting. She said, we had lunch at the Doris Inn and then started walking around, she said. I was taking pictures with my Canon camera of Scott and our daughter, Elisa, who was then five. When about 200 meters from the shore, moving right to left at a steady speed, was this creature. It was spinning and rolling at times. We never saw a head or a neck. After a couple of minutes, it just disappeared, and we never saw it again. At first, I wondered if it was an otter or a pair of otters or a seal, but we never saw a head, and it never came up again for air. It was making this strange movement on the surface. We did not hear any sound. There was never any strange shapes below the surface. I could not make out any colors. The water was very dark. I could not accurately assess its length, but the two parts that were visible were less than 2 meters long together. I don't know what it was, but it was definitely a creature, an animal. At the time, I did not want to face public ridicule by making the photographs public. But I met Steve Feltham and showed the images, and he said immediately that they were very interesting. I've always believed there was something in Loch Ness. There's something unusual there, but I don't know what it is. What I saw looked like a serpent. It was definitely a creature, and it was moving. Mr. Feltham said, they are exactly the type of pictures I've been wanting to take for 3 decades. It is rare to see something so clear on the surface. They are vindication for all the people who believe there is something unexplained in Loch Ness. They are remarkable. I have studied them and still do not know what it is. We are lucky the Kellys have decided to go public at last. I've met the Kellys twice, and they're absolutely genuine. I persuaded them that these pictures are so important that they should make them public. They warrant further investigation. It is not driftwood. It is a moving creature and totally unexplained. Today, the Cryptid Factor podcast released and analyzed all 71 frames in the hope that it would spark informed debate by investigators around the planet. It says here, Hollywood star Rhys Darby and his Cryptid Factor co-host director Leon Kirkbeck and Dan Schreiber put together the images into a video. The Cryptid Factor host said the video allows us to see how the monster moves, which is a game changer, Dan Schreiber added. Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, the mysterious video will give you goosebumps and have you debating late into the night over what was captured by Chi in the lock that day. I tell you what, I will post this article so you can see the actual pictures, the individual pictures. Mm-hmm. Here's the one picture, Mally. You can see actually the humps out of the water. I mean, it's really, really tight.
Mm-hmm.
That picture there.
Hmm.
Even then, when you see the tight picture of those humps coming out of the water, it's still kind of hard to tell, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't look like driftwood. I mean, usually it does look like driftwood, or just the way that the waves are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The sun's hitting the waves, but that looks a little bit weirder.
It does. It has more of an eel-like.
Yeah, like a fleshy kind of.
Yeah, it definitely looks like eel flesh. Here's the other one that's really, really tight. And It's not driftwood.
Right.
But it's got a different appearance. It's got a scaly appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll post this on in the description of the program so you guys can click on it and take a look at it for yourself. One more story here, Mel. This is the final one. I pulled this one because, you know, yesterday we were talking about Ulta Beauty stores getting ripped off on Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals. Mm-hmm. We don't need the beauty stores anymore, Mel.
Oh, okay.
We don't need them anymore. There is a brand new beauty tip that will take 20 years off your appearance.
Ooh, do tell.
Yeah. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
It only requires 100 days of your life.
Oh.
Look at that. You're like, oh, you're not committed.
That sounds so much of an effort.
Yeah. I knew it. You weren't committed to it. You weren't committed to the bit. I knew it the minute I said it.
When you said 100 days, I'm like,
Just 100 days, Mally. That's it.
Does it require me to wear pants?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. You can go pantsless for this deal. Now, the guy who I told you messaged me, he's all enthralled now. He'll spend the 100 days with you.
I always say that when I have to leave the house. I'm like, does this require me to wear pants? Meaning, can I just wear yoga pants or something out the door? I've gotten lazy as I've gotten older.
So have I, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah. If I can wear a hoodie and shorts, I'm good.
Yep.
I think that's...
I was going to say hair in a bun, but you don't
have I don't have any hair. Yeah. Yeah. If I can shave my head once every 3-4 days, I'm good.
So, yeah.
I have gotten lazy.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah. A man who spent a record 100 days underwater claims it de-aged him 20 years and he's given proof.
Oh, he must be wrinkly though.
I don't know. I'm about to show you pictures. Dr. Joseph DeTuri spent 100 days underwater last year. A man who spent that 100 days underwater claims the experience de-aged him and even shares that proof. He did it, 100 days in a habitat, 30 feet under a Florida lagoon. You have to go to Florida for this.
Oh, I was hoping I could just do it in my bathtub. I'm like, how deep does it have to be?
You don't even want to leave the house for this. I can tell.
No.
Yeah. Can it be a hot tub in my backyard?
Yeah. I'll get one of those little blow-up pools and float.
Yes. Can it be an above-ground pool in my backyard?
With a cocktail in one hand.
Yeah, just I'll hold it above the water.
Yeah, exactly. I'm breathing through the straw.
That's right. It wasn't just for a bit of fun for Dr. DeTuri, though. As he monitored how his body would react to long-term extreme pressure, he even discovered a brand new species. It says there's brand new species.
Mm.
Yeah. While doing so. During this time, the scientist and former naval officer stayed in a small 9-meter by 9-meter room that he had to scuba dive to get to.
Oh, this is a lot of work.
Yeah. This doesn't sound like a vacation, Mal. Dr. DeTuri was set to research a type of new medicine that can help deliver oxygen to the human body under high pressures by helping it to grow new blood vessels. When the scientist was not recording his body's reaction to the extreme pressure of living underwater, he was teaching school kids through video link on his laptop. Oh, so you got to teach school kids, too.
This is not sounding good.
No.
It's just getting worse and worse.
Yeah, I know. This. Pray I don't alter the deal further, Mally. Dr. DeTuri was also closely monitored by medical, psychological, and psychosocial experts. So there are all kinds of people poking and prodding them at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Press release from last year added part of the work will see a psychologist and a psychiatrist monitor the effects he experiences while in an environment similar to extended space travel. Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought with space travel, weren't they coming back shorter?
They were, weren't they?
Yeah, I thought they were losing like a couple inches in height.
Thank you for saying in height. He says it's an isolating, confined, extreme environment. And as humans, we really need to figure out how we're going to be living in that environment. If we're going to expand our planet, if we're going to go interplanetary, if we're going to find all the cures that we need to find. When he emerged from his underwater mission last June, Dr. DeTuri claimed that blood tests showed a 50% reduction in every inflammatory marker in his body. That's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
That means not a lot of pain, too.
Right.
He claimed a lot of areas of his health improved following the 100-day mission, including longer telomeres, which are the structure on chromosomes that are often linked to extending life. Speaking to reporters at WKMG News in Orlando recently, Dr. Dottori said, "I'm 56 now. My extrinsic biological age was 44. When I got out of the water, my extrinsic age was 34. Interesting. So my telomeres lengthened," he said. "I actually got younger while I was under the water."
But if he's living under the water for 100 days, mm-hmm. is it basically like living in an oxygen tank? Because don't they use those for healing?
Yes, a hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
Still a lot of work. I think I'll pass.
Yeah, right, right. Dr. Dottori claims that his telomeres are not as long as they were when he first came out in June, but they are longer than they were before he embarked on his research. He also believes his phenomenal age reversal was caused by living in a high-pressure or hyperbaric environment, just like Mally said.
So, look at that, I'm smart!
Yes, you are.
I can't pronounce words, but I'm smart.
There you go. So, essentially, what Mally is saying is, screw the underwater crap. Go get yourself a hyperbaric chamber. Just live in that some bitch for 100 days.
Exactly. Yeah. I think one of the Kardashians did. I think it was Jenner. She goes in one every day.
Yeah. Well, that should extend your telomeres.
Mm-hmm.
Make you live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. I guess. So that's, I guess, the moral.
That's
of this
why
story.
They look young. Unless they made a deal with the devil, but, you know.
Hey, that's the subject for another Supernatural News.
There we go.
Yeah. Why the Kardashians are secretly Satanists.
Now I'm going to get an email from Kris Jenner. We're going to sue you if you do not remove that comment.
Oh, but hey, that way you can shop the Paranormal Girl line to her. Huh?
Ooh,
yeah.
She'll probably take over, though. They've got all the money in the world.
Yeah, but you know what? You'll sell millions and millions of items, and you'll get a percentage of that rather than, you know, just and you'll be rich.
I don't see myself coming out ahead with the Kardashians. I think they would bury me.
But if they said to you, Mally, you know what? You get $5 off of every item, and we're going to sell millions of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, I guess so. Yeah. Sold.
There you go.
Move on to something else.
There you go. See? That's all I'm saying. So, speaking of Paranormal Girl, ParanormalGirl.com is what you got going on, right?
Yes. Yes. I've got a pair of shorts and I've got a sweatshirt and a t-shirt that I need to post.
Oh.
That will be for sale. So I just have to take the lovely photos. But once again, I'm lazy. So it requires me to get out the mannequins.
Yeah.
But yes, I will be getting those up soon.
All right. There you go.
Something to wear for spring.
So new stuff coming out for spring on ParanormalGirl.com. Keep keep tuned in and keep watching ParanormalGirl.com for that. Also, check out Mally on Max.
Yeah.
Not that way. Not
remember
that way.
Remember Skinamax, like back in the 80s and 90s? That's what I thought of when you said Max. I was like, yes.
Not that way. I mean, there's not a new movie out or anything like that. Strange Evidence. That's why she's on Max. I mean, not that there's strange evidence of her on Max. Yeah. Come on. Keep your mind out of the gutter, folks. Strange Evidence is on the Science Channel. There's always marathons on the Science Channel and on other Discovery channels. Also on Max, you can get it on demand on Max. So check out our very own Mally Fox on Strange Evidence. Also, I'll be at KNSI Radio this weekend, blathering on about weather, sports. I don't know. I might even bring up Chipmunk Talk. I don't know. This Week in Rock History. All that other stuff. Every once in a while, I'll mention the Chipmunks on air. Mm-hmm. Just so I can have a native St. Cloudian try to knock down the doors and remove me from the studio.
And when is your one event for yes. the animals?
That's right. Speaking of animals, thank you, Mally. May 18th at the Palmer House Hotel in Sauk Center. Go to darknessradioshow.com/events. And Potographs for Pooches is the name of the event. Tim Miley and the crew from Potographs for Pooches is putting on the event. All proceeds go to the Eagle's Nest Animal Shelter. So Richard Estep, Tim Miley, I'm forgetting the name of the psychic that's there. I'm sorry, I do this every time. I shouldn't remember her name. It's a star-studded event, and of course, the proceeds go to the animals. So,
are you going to do an investigating while you're there?
I hope so.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. I'm ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, it's a one-day event. So, but hurry and get your tickets, folks, and hurry and get your rooms, because I hear that everything's going fast. So, in fact, I think there's only a few tickets remaining.
Okay.
Yeah. So, hurry up and do that. They had a very successful event out in Michigan. Saw the pictures.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. Saw the pictures from Ann Arbor, and they had a very successful event. So congratulations to Tim and the gang, Tim and Lauren and the gang out there in Ann Arbor. Had a very good event out there as well. So I'm very proud of Tim and the events that he's doing for Potographs for Pooches. So
yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And the Michigan crowd has embraced Potographs, and hoping that Tim can expand these events throughout the nation. And now it's time for the Minnesota people to step up. I want the Minnesota people to step up and prove that they have what it takes to support the animals here in Minnesota. So It's time to do that. Get your tickets for the Palmer House Hotel on May 18th. Go to darknessradioshow.com events. Click on that banner and let's support the Eagle's Nest Shelter.
So people can see us at the Michigan Paracon, the both of us.
That's right, in August. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's also there in the events section at darknessradioshow.com. So there you go. Well, that should do it for today. Tomorrow on the big show, Mally, Joshua Chairs will be with us. He's got his paranormal group we'll be talking about. We'll be doing some good old-fashioned investigating, and we'll play some EVPs. We'll talk about his evidence and his group. Oh, you know what we forgot to do today?
What?
We forgot to do your Parashare stuff.
Oops.
We have some you know what? We'll save it for next time.
There we go.
Yeah, we'll save it for next time. Shoot. I had Parashare stories today, but I didn't do them.
Well, we'll do them next week.
We'll do them next week. Well, hold on.
We're very grateful they sent them to us.
That's right. We do have stories from... I'm sorry. We have stories from... I feel like such a heel now. We have a few different stories for Parashare. We'll hold on to them for next week. But we've got a few of your stories for next week. I'm so sorry, guys. Before we go today, we want to thank Surfshark VPN for sponsoring the program. Again, folks, you want to protect yourself from hackers. You want to be able to keep yourself not only behind a firewall, you want to be able to protect yourself with antivirus. You want to protect yourself from malware. You want to keep yourself and your digital profile off the internet so hackers can't get to you. The best way to do it is with Surfshark VPN. And the best way to do it is to do it and save yourself a little bit of money by getting 3 months free by using the code DARKNESS at checkout. The way you do it as well is to go to our special URL, surfshark.deals/darkness. Again, use that VPN. Again, the VPN is covering up your URL, kind of like a pair of pants, and it's also keeping you away from hackers. You can also use their malware, use their antivirus, use everything that they have in that suite to keep yourself safe and secure. It's real easy to protect your computer and yourself from hackers, and also take advantage of some of those deals you're looking for online with Surfshark. Do it right now. Get 3 months free. Secure your privacy right now with Surfshark. Enter your coupon code DARKNESS for an extra 3 months free. You do it right now at surfshark.deals/darkness. So remember to do that and support Surfshark. They're supporting the show today. So a reminder to do that as well. Tomorrow on the big program, we go paranormal investigating with Joshua Chairs from Paranormal Detectives LLC. He'll take us to a few haunted investigations on the East Coast, specifically the Pennsylvania areas, the Philadelphia areas. We'll go up and down the East Coast with Joshua, and we'll go to a few spots you may know, a few spots you may not know. And we'll go on some adventures with he and his team. He's got some EVP for us as well. It's always a treat. So we'll check in with Joshua Chairs tomorrow on Darkness Radio. That'll do it for Mally Fox. I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.